recalling the basics of what it is we're truly trying to do with these horses. And I guess that's how I've been able to, train these things is keep it simple. Keep it in my, wheelhouse, so to speak, and not try to get too, because there's so many different programs. There's so much that a person can do and whatnot, but I just kind of keep it in my own wheelhouse. What works for me, what I feel like I'm getting done with these horses. I love to teach my horses. I love to create a partnership with my horses. That's like the biggest thing for me. I don't want to force them to do something they don't want to do when they don't understand. I like to back off and help them to understand what it is I'm asking instead of trying to force that.
You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to The Ride, a podcast brought to you by Horse and Rider Magazine, hosted by Nicole Cherico and Emily Carey.
This episode of The Ride is brought to you by Ride TV. You're going to want to watch Horse and Rider's videos on Ride TV. Watch carefully curated playlists for a variety of Western disciplines, including topics about gear, drills, mental strategies, and more. Our playlists are here for you to use to troubleshoot, progress in your goals, and improve your horsemanship. Plus, binge hundreds of hours of archived live streams, including the NRHA Derby, Mustang Challenge, RSMC Ranch Sorting World Finals, and more. Use promo code The Ride for 15% off your first month at RideTVGo.tv.
Welcome back to The Ride. This is Emily Carey, and I'm here with my co-host, Nicole Cherico. And today we're joined by one of the most accomplished non-pros in the cowhorse world, Debbie Crafton. Debbie recently crossed the $1 million mark in NRCHA lifetime earnings at the Hackamore Classic, making her the fourth woman in history to do so. In just 7 years of showing in the Reined Cowhorse, she's managed to win every major NRCHA event, the Snafflebit Futurity, Stallion Stakes, Hackamore Classic, and the Derby. And in 2023, she was named the world's greatest non-pro during the inaugural year of the event. We are so excited to talk to Debbie about her path to success in and out of the show pen, how she made the leap from the all-around world to the Reined Cowhorse arena, and what it takes to stay competitive as a non-pro at the highest level. Debbie, thank you so much for being here to chat with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So to get us started, can you tell us a little bit about your background with horses? How did you get started, and what kind of riding did you do before you hit the Reined Cowhorse?
Sure. Yeah. So I was born with horses practically. I was born and raised in Oregon, grew up in Junction City, and my mom and dad had a lot of horses. We raised horses. They had two own sons, a King Fritz and a son of Doc Tom Tucker. And back in, the mid-80s, that was kind of the going cow horse pedigree. So anyway, I was raised with horses and cow bloodline, so to speak. So that's kind of the start as far as how the horses ended up for me. We rode all the time, and as little kids, we done everything a horseback.
Awesome. And you didn't start showing in the Reined Cowhorse until pretty recently. What drew you to it, and how did you transition into that?
Yeah. So, again, being raised the way we were, my dad worked for Don Murphy, during the busy show seasons. He would go down to, that's when Don was still in Brentwood, California. And so dad would go down to Murphy's and help, during the summer and right before the Futurity and during the Futurity. And then obviously with our horses, the way they were bred, we were kind of cow horse based, even though we weren't showing cow horse. So that was kind of how I guess I got started. That was kind of, as a little girl, I watched, the VHS tapes from the Snafflebit Futurity. I watched them like kids watch cartoons, really. And so I guess the cow horse was always in my blood, is wanting to do that. And, I didn't start showing and truly participating in it until recently, but I've always kind of been involved with the cow horse background, the basics of it, you know, ranching and that kind of stuff, which is, you know, how I got led to finally getting the courage up to start showing and foreseeing, you know, what it is I really wanted to do. I mean, I wanted to do it as a little girl. I just never really had the opportunity. And so finally I just took a leap.
What made you take the leap? Was it a certain horse that you had been riding, or was it just the point you were in your life where you could go show? Like what triggered you to finally be like, that's it. I'm done sitting on the sidelines and watching this. I'm going to be in the show pen.
Yeah. So, you know, I had shown reiners. I had kind of participated in a little bit of everything. Always wanting to go to always with the dream of being able to show at the Snaffle Bit Fraternity one day. And I guess what triggered it is I had hit a few Colorado shows here and there with some horses that weren't necessarily trained cow horses, but were handy enough that I could kind of get shown. Finally, when it was in 2018, I had a TR Dualray daughter, a 3-year-old, and I was just like, you know, I'm not getting any younger. And so sitting and waiting is not getting me anywhere. I just need to go do it. And so I went ahead and bought an entry and, you know, made a plan. I'm going to Snaffle Bit Fraternity in 2018. I hit a couple, you know, small fraternities with her. And I happened to be at the Mid-America Fraternity in 2018, which is a Colorado show up here. And Luke Jones had a buckskin colt that was a huge stopper. And I just really liked him. And it turned out he was for sale. And so I was able to make a deal with Luke, and I bought that horse. His name was Shiny Little Bells. And so now I had two to go to the fraternity with. And I just decided, let's go do it. I'm not getting any younger, and there's nothing going to change. I've got to just take that step. And so that's what I did. And then in 2018, at the fraternity there, I did not have a very good prelims on the TR Dualray, but the Shiny Little Bells horse, I ended up winning the prelims on him and so made the finals. And at the time, I was eligible for everything. I ended up winning the novice non-pro, and I was third in the intermediate and then fourth in the actual non-pro. On that horse. So I win like 45,000 at that show on him. And, then I was really hooked, and off and running we were.
The first cow horse I ever rode was his sire.
Oh, was it really?
Which is, yeah, it was during a Brad Barkemeyer video shoot. So that's really cool. So you didn't even like give yourself a year to like kind of really experience NRCHA competition at that big level. You were like, nope, we're buying a 3-year-old, or I have a 3-year-old. We're going to go do the Snaffle Bit. And that is insanely cool, because I don't know that I would ever have the courage to be like, nope, I'm doing it. I have a 3-year-old, and we're going to go do it. How do you mentally prepare yourself to go from, you know, competing at a local level or at some of the Colorado shows and competing in other events throughout your whole life, and obviously being around the cow horses, but how do you go from that to, I'm going to go compete at the largest event in the country, you know, and not even just participate, but do amazing.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I mean, like, I have to think back on that, I guess. I had never even been, well, I take that back. I actually had taken in the Snaffle Bit Fraternity in 1999 when it was in Reno. Bobby Avila won it on Smart Zanolina. And that was the only Snaffle Bit Fraternity that I had even been to and watched, and it was just for the finals. It is a little crazy when you say it to have just, let's buy a slot and go to the horse show. I think it was just more of, I'm going to go do the best I can do, and I'm going to enjoy this experience and just see where it lands me. There was no anticipation of anything except just show my horse really smart and see how this rolls. And, by doing so, it paid off really well. So That's all I have. I mean, I don't know what I was. I mean, honestly, when you think back, you would think that you would ease, you know, transition up into that. But no, I just, let's grab a three and play the horse show. So that's what I did. And it worked out really great for me. And I mean, I've always been really, you know, drawn to the young horses, and it's been easy for me to ride and show young horses. So I think the Futurity, I didn't even think twice, where most people would start with, you know, an older horse, a bridle horse or something like that. For me, it was just easy to ride the three-year-old and then, yeah, let's show up to the biggest stage and see how it plays out.
I mean, you did so much that first year. That's such a way to just dive in feet first. What were some of like the biggest challenges? Because there must have been so many learning curves that you experienced that first year getting ready and going forward. What are some of the biggest challenges and surprises that you first learned when you entered?
Yeah, you know, I think what I learned is it takes, you know, I always thought my horses were really broke, and they were handy, but you know, I realized how broke one needs to be. So that was a challenge. Cattle, how important cattle are and having access to them. You know, that was a challenge for sure. So I think in the beginning it was just the whole, I didn't even know how to follow like the true system. I didn't know nothing. I mean, I showed up green as could be and, just looking for guidance. I had no herd help. I remember, you know, for the prelims there, I mean, I knew a couple guys kind of like, you know, hey, by the way, you don't really know me, but maybe you know so-and-so. Would you mind helping? You know, the NRCHA, and especially at that premier event, I recall, wow, what great people. I mean, all of the NRCHA, the very upper, toughest, open guys to the low levels, such good people. So good-hearted, such true camaraderie. I mean, you just felt at home. They were all there to truly help you. Nobody's snickering. Nobody's making fun of you. I mean, it was just really an incredible feeling and an incredible experience, and it hooked me. You know, the event hooked me. But then having those people, I mean, I remember riding up to Chris Dawson, and we have trucks, so I drive a truck too. And my husband drives a truck, and we deliver alfalfa cubes a lot. And so I rode up to Chris for the prelims at the herd, their work. And I says, you don't know me, but you know my husband, Andy, and he brings you cubes. So would you mind helping me in the herd? And he's like, well, of course I know you, and I've got you, no problem. And then, you know, when I rode in the herd, they didn't just leave me. They guided me through the herd. They guided me on which cow to pick. They guided me on how to, you know, position my horse and when to quit. And that was really special and just such a great experience. And just a true testament to our people in our association, our members, our trainers, and everything. It was pretty cool.
I love that. And I love that it was Chris. I mean, Chris is such a great guy, right? So if you're going to go up to anybody, it should be Chris, because he is such a friendly guy and seems like he's willing to help anyone. But what you just said is like such a true testament to the NRCHA and the cow horse division. And I only got to compete at one cow horse event in my career. However, I was so nervous because I knew nobody, and I met so many people, and they were all so friendly, and they would even like come to the arena and watch me and cheer for me. And like, I have never been around that kind of camaraderie before. So it's incredible. I love the NRCHA.
Yeah, I have to agree totally, because, you know, I had shown at the NRHA shows, you know, I showed the reiners and I showed rope horses, you know, went to the quarter horse shows and participated that way and whatnot. And, you know, had friends and nice people and good people in those, but nothing like the NRCHA. I mean, it just really is so above and beyond the others, I feel like. At least for me, it was. It was really amazing.
So you've obviously worked with a ton of really great trainers and through the years have gotten to know a lot of really great people, but correct me if I'm wrong, you do a lot of the training and riding yourself as like a non-pro rider, a kind of a do-it-yourselfer. Can you kind of talk a little bit about your experience?
Yeah, so I do. I train all my own horses. And you know, that started, I mean, after the 2018 fraternity in 2019, I bought a yearling at the Western Bloodstock sale there at you know, the Snaffle Bit fraternity, and I brought him home and started him, and I ended up coming back in 2019. And I guess that's when it was. Anyway, and I bought a, let me pause here. So I bought that yearling doing a little time. I guess I must have bought him in 2017. Went to the Snaffle Bit fraternity in 2018. Won the fraternity on him in 2019. But he was a home-trained horse. He was the kind of horse that made me feel like I was a horse trainer. And encouraged me to continue on, that I could do this. As far as training these horses, you know, I guess I've just, again, I was raised in the horses, training and starting our own colts. I mean, when I was a kid, we would start about 20 colts a year. And they were true Brombies, like not handled. You know, we would worm them as weanlings, kick them back out. And then as yearlings, long yearlings, early 2-year-olds, we would generally rope them, put halters on them, try to gentle them down and, you know, start them that way. So again, you know, the horse training part of things has always kind of been in my background. And as far as, you know, being able to relate and teach a horse. And so doing these cow horses, it's kind of been, I mean, I've had a ton of help, a ton of encouragement, and guidance with different trainers. But it's just kind of been a touch and go, you know, do it yourself and gut instinct and just recalling the basics of what it is we're truly trying to do with these horses. And I guess that's how I've been able to, you know, train these things is keep it simple. Keep it in my, you know, wheelhouse, so to speak, and not try to get too, cause there's so many different programs. There's so much that a person can do and whatnot, but I just kind of keep it in my own wheelhouse. What works for me, what I feel like I'm getting done with these horses. I love to teach my horses. I love to create a partnership with my horses. That's like the biggest thing for me. I don't want to force them to do something they don't want to do when they don't understand. I like to back off and help them to understand what it is I'm asking instead of trying to force that. And so I guess, you know, it just gets back to the teaching. I love teaching them and I love watching them grow. And in return, it's teaching me so much and it creates me to grow so much. So it's kind of a win-win situation.
So obviously you're insanely hands on deck. I don't know how you were able to manage all of that. But you touched on a little bit about some of the other mentors and trainers who've helped you along the way. Could you tell us a little bit more about them and about some of the lessons that you've learned from other cow horse trainers?
I have to give a ton of credit to Bobby Avila. When I was 16, I was going to quarter horse shows. I'm like, you know, old stock trailer, old Chevy pickup with a horse that was not a show horse, but he was my best friend. And I was showing in the reining because we didn't have access to cattle. And so I was running for the youth stuff. And I just tried to get as close to Bob as I could. He was my hero. And of course, you know, he was in Yamhill, Oregon at the time. And he was at all those quarter horse shows. And so I really got close to Bob. And finally one day he looked at me and I was 17 at this time. And he says, "Do you want a job?" And I said, "Yes, yes, I do." And he says, "You're hired." And I remember running to the payphone, because back then we didn't have cell phones. And I called my dad and I'm like, "Bobby Avila just hired me. I'm going to work for Bobby Avila." And it was just such a, exciting moment. You know, I moved into Bob's, and I worked for Bob for a few months, actually. It ended up being Mom and Dad had a lot of horses, and I kind of abandoned them, I felt like. They just didn't have anybody to help them, and I just kind of left cold turkey. So I only worked for Bob a few months, and then I went back to kind of take care of my folks and the horses they had and get situated there. And then I would go up and I would help Bob in the busy season when he needed me. He'd call me and I'd go up for, you know, a month here, a month there and help him out. But Bob was such a horseman, as everybody knows. And I think, you know, he just taught me a lot about he was so respectful to his employees during that time. I mean, he was always so good to me, and he just taught me to be such a horseman. I mean, a true horseman in the way we did everything, the way we handled them, the way we rode them, and just the way we presented ourselves. So he deserves a lot of credit to get me started. As far as once I was involved in, you know, showing, tons and tons of credit to Matt Cook. He's been one that has always been in my corner. I'm going to tear up thinking about it. He's always been in my corner. He's just always been right there for me. And I could always call him with any questions, and he would answer them, even though I never really go up and ride with him much. A lot of people, you know, think that maybe we ride together a lot. We don't. But I can rely on him, and he's always helped me a ton and always been there. And so I give him a lot of credit. I think keeping me sane for the fence work, especially early on, that's probably where I would get a little stressed out, is, you know, working this cow when it gets kicked out. I mean, maybe I'm sitting really good and now it comes down to the cow work, and, you know, I could let that kind of blow my mind up a little bit. And, you know, Matt was always really good. And, you know, something he always says is, work the cow they kick out. Don't overthink it. Just go work your cow. And those words would just calm me down and I could just focus. Yeah, let's just go work this cow they kick out. Let's not overthink this. And so Matt deserves a ton of credit. Chris Dawson is another one that has always been right there. And, you know, the same kind of thing. I mean, just, I can call him and ask him a question. He's always great to answer. But then at the shows, I mean, he's there. He's you know, he's in your corner. He's got your back. And he's just taught me so much about slowing down. The faster it goes, the more you slow down, and being patient and thinking through that run. And, you know, he is the epitome of being able to think and slow down, even though he's going fast. And so he's just been such a cool guy to have, you know, on your side and in your corner and to learn from. And, you know, Don Murphy's another one. Of course, Dad working for him, you know, in the busy seasons, and then being able to go and get help from Don. You know, he's the trainer's trainer, right? And so Murph has just been so helpful in being able to pick out things, you know, that I need help with, and just, again, you know, have my back. I mean, there's so many guys I'm going to forget, guys that have been just so helpful and inspiring through, you know, this process, that I kind of feel bad. I know there's so many more, but those are ones that really jump out.
Don Murphy, legendary. Avila, obviously one of the best legends in the game. And then you have Chris Dawson and Matt Cook, who are currently at the top of their game. And Matt Cook, I love watching him go down the fence. I don't know what it is about him, but there is something every time I watch him go down the fence on a horse. It is just magical.
Yeah, Matt is so good down the fence. You know, Matt reads a cow so well. But his horses, I think what's so magical about Matt going down the wall is his horses. I mean, that's a team right there. They are 100% teamed up, and his horses and him work that cow together. There is, the horses are just as hooked and dialed as Matt is. And so it is, you know, I've referred to him as, you know, he's the king of the fence, right? The fence work, because he is just so spectacular down the fence. And, you know, his speed is always on his side, but it's always so controlled. It just, it's really magical.
We've talked a lot about the riders and the trainers who have kind of helped guided you into your career. But let's talk a little bit about the horses. You mentioned to start, you had a horse as a youth rider that was your best friend. Can we kind of start with him and what made him so special to you?
Story on this one. His name was Doc Bar Bruce, and I called him Tucker. He was by our stallion, my folks' stallion, Tucker Doc 11, who was the son of Doc Tom Tucker, and he was out of a running bred mare. He was truly a renegade as a young horse. Like as a two-year-old, my dad tried to start him, and he was such a dirty bronc that dad tried to sell him as a bareback horse to, you know, somebody that, you know, rodeo string, because he was a legit dirty bronc. And so that didn't work out. And it turns out another guy comes along and thinks that he can get along with the horse, and he buys him from dad, or they do a trade. And they do a trade, and then he ended up bringing the horse back to dad probably 6 months later. The horse, they'd kind of tried to ride him. He'd bucked him off. They needed help. They needed guidance. They asked dad, can you start this colt for us? So dad takes him back, and horse is still extremely cinchy, extremely bronky. And this one particular day, dad had maybe put a ride on him. I did not witness that, but I think he'd put a ride or two on him. And this one particular day, Tucker is standing in the round pen. Dad just had him turn loose in this round pen. And I'm walking by, and I think I was 10 years old, 11 years old. And I look over at that horse, and I thought, I'm going to ride you. So I put a bridle in his mouth, snaffle, and I led him over to the fence, and I crawled up and laid across him, and he stood there, and I eased up on him, and he stood there, and I rode him around the round pen, and he rode around, and so I walked over, and I kicked the gate open, and I rode him out of the round pen, out of the barn, out into the parking lot. And my dad looks up, and I said, hey, Dad, look. And he liked to have died, to say the least. And he's hollering in the quietest voice he ever had, telling me to get off this horse. And anyway, I did not listen. But from that day on, I rode Tucker. Him and I, we just understood each other. And from that day on, I rode Tucker. The people that owned him came and picked him up 60 days later. And like I was roping the dummy on him, and he rode nice. 60 days later, I rode him quite a bit. And I told him, I said, if you ever want to sell that horse, I want to buy him. And so it was about a year and a half later, I guess it was, they called and they wanted to sell Tucker. And so they allowed me to make payments. I made payments, paid for him myself. And I bought Tucker and brought him home and, you know, went to riding him, and then decided that I wanted to show. And the only thing I could do was the reining, because, again, we didn't have cattle, wasn't set up. I mean, we didn't even have an arena. We had a little stall barn and a pasture. And so to ride, we would have to haul to an indoor arena. Like at the time, there was the Albany Fairgrounds there in Albany, Oregon, or the Corvallis Fairgrounds in Corvallis, Oregon. So we would haul to the fairgrounds. But yeah, so I started teaching Tucker how to change leads and trying to teach him how to stop, even though he really wasn't much of he'd stop, but you know, he not a whole lot of slide in that stop. You know, taught him to turn around and all that. And, I would take myself to the horse shows. I worked at a cow sale barn, once a week, and I would make enough money that month to be able to pay for my entries and my gas to the horse show. And that's how Tucker, I'd sleep in the pickup or in the nose of the trailer, and Tucker would sleep in the trailer, because we didn't make enough money to be able to afford a stall. And I hauled myself to the horse shows, and I did that for about 2 years, I guess. I was, you know, maybe maybe running a little, you know, against the, maybe didn't have a driver's license the whole time, but, you know, that's, I'd go to those Albany shows, and Mount Hood had a quarter horse show, and I ended up, winning the youth, the novice youth year end award on him. And I thought I was just, I was king of the hill. I mean, I'd really accomplished something on this little horse that at one time was a little outlaw. And, you know, from then on, I had Tucker for quite a while. I roped on him and whatnot, and then eventually ended up selling him. As I had progressed and wasn't using him, I ended up selling him to some friends, and so he went on and done that for some people. They team sorted and done some stuff on him for a number of years, and then I bought him back as an old horse and kept him until he passed away. So he was my start as far as, you know, something that was special. A lot of accomplishment with a horse that didn't want to be a good horse in the beginning.
I love that so, so much. I love that it's such a full circle moment for you too with Tucker. But you've also had a lot of great horses recently. I mean, Found Love of Hooters, He's a Wee Bit, Duel of the Time, obviously, you know, you won the Snaffle Bit with him, SJR Diamond Luna, SJR Some Kind of Rockstar. Can you talk about some of your current horses, some of the horses that you're showing right now? What stands out about them? I know you just won the Hackamore Classic on Boot, Scoot, and Flow. So you've got quite the lineup in your barn right now, too.
I have to give credit. Before I go into all those horses, I have to give credit to a horse called A Quick Remedy. He was a son of Very Smart Remedy, or is a son of Very Smart Remedy. I bought him off of Christian and Danielle Libert, and he was a horse that had some not so great X-rays, and I bought him worth the money. And they had trained him. I bought him his 4-year-old year. That is the horse that taught me how to go down the fence. He was so, so amazing down the wall. So cowy and yet so patient. And he's the one that taught me what going down the fence was supposed to feel like. I ended up reserve at the NRCHA Derby. The last year it was in Paso on that horse. So that would have been... That would have been in 2019. I was reserve at the Derby on him. And then I went on to make him a bridal horse. I showed him in some bridal stuff. And I still have him today. So he deserves a lot of credit. He was very special there. And then since him, obviously doing a little time, you know, I bought him as a yearling, trained him, won the Snaffle Bit Futurity on him in 2019. Made all the premier finals on him. I think to date I've won 120-some thousand on him. That horse he was the kind of horse and is the kind of horse that makes you feel like a horse trainer. He is so easy. I had maybe one off day with him his 3-year-old year, which is just crazy. Like, never had a bad day with him. He was just always so willing and tried so hard and had so much talent that he truly made me feel like I could train horses. Although I honestly deep down knew that he was just that good. It's not that I was good. He was that good. And, you know, then I guess it was, I had a couple others there. I'm trying to remember when I bought Some Kind of Rockstar, his 2-year-old year, off of Kaylee Wilson. And he was just the kind of horse that was very similar to doing a little time, just such a willing partner, so, so good-minded. I mean, a true smooth as a cat. Those horses are just so good-minded. And he was one that made me feel like I could just call on him, you know, and he would always have my back. And he has. I mean, I made the finals on him at the Snaffle Bit Futurity. I ended up fourth on him there. I actually tied with myself on a Betty's a Cat filly that I got off of Justin Wright. And I made the finals on both those and ended up tying with myself for fourth at the Futurity. And then Rockstar went on to I believe I was reserve on him, maybe, I can't remember if it was his four-year-old year or his five-year-old year at the Stallion Stakes. And he just went on to make all the premier event finals, his Derby years, you know, his 4 and 5 year old years. And then has just turned into an incredible bridle horse. I mean, recently I take him out to Scottsdale there at the Derby and I show him in the non-pro bridle. And then Tucker, my little boy, shows him in the youth boxing. And, you know, he's just one of those so versatile and so willing to, you know, gear down to do the job he needs to do for Tucker and then yet step up when I need him. And that's actually how it ended up being. I think I showed him out of the herd. And then Tucker came and showed him in the youth. And then the next day, I needed to show him in the rain and down the fence. And so he transitions to whatever we need. Just a true testament on what an incredibly good-minded horse that horse is. And, you know, during this whole time, I'm breeding mares to him, hand-breeding mares to him, of all things. I mean, we're not collecting. We're hand-breeding. And you'd never know he's a stud horse, you know, at the horse shows. He's just such a good horse, such a great-minded horse. But, you know, he's a wee bit. Found Love at Hooters probably are the... They probably deserve the most... what's the word I want? I guess recognition or for blasting my career. I mean, really sending it into overdrive. You know, I go to Stallion Stakes with Found Love at Hooters and he's a wee bet and some kind of rock star, makes the finals. I end up winning the Stallion Stakes on Found Love at Hooters and reserve on He's a Wee Bet. And then we go on to the NRCHA Derby. And again, all three horses make the finals, but this time I win it on He's a Wee Bet, and I'm reserve on Found Love at Hooters. And that was just, wow, I couldn't believe that happened. I mean, what great horses. Well, then at the time, they still had the Eastern Derby going. So I go out to the Eastern Derby. All three horses make the finals again. And then this time, I went in on Found Love at Hooters, and I'm reserve on He's a Wee Bet. And, I mean, that was just incredible. You know, those horses did that for me. I mean, they were just spectacular and still are. They're both still here. They will die here. They owe me nothing, and I appreciate them so much. They are really part of my family, those two geldings. And, you know, that same year in 2022, I don't think we've mentioned, I won the Snaffle Bit Futurity again on Biscuits Are Smokin', and she is a daughter of Hickory Holly Time out of I See the Biscuits. And so she was, you know, 2022 was an unbelievable year that was just so magical and it will probably never happen again. It was just an incredible year. I had such an incredible year on those horses and they were just... They were fantastic. I can't even put into words what they mean to me and all of that, what they did for me. Just incredible. And, you know, SJR Diamond Luna has been an amazing mare. I bought her from San Juan's through Matt. I'd actually, you know, seen her and talked to Matt and whatnot early in the year. And out of all these three-year-olds, she was my pick. I just love the looks of her. Sorrel, strip face, four white socks. That's my kind of horse. And it was in July. He just didn't think she was going to be quite good enough for his string. And he says, you ought to try her. And so I just bought her. And I guess it was in 2022 as well that she went to the fraternity. And I made the finals on her. I ended up winning the... San Juan Incentive honor. And, you know, at that time, I wasn't sure that that mare would be with me the whole time. Like, she was a good horse, but I just wasn't sure that I thought she was all that. And in true CD Diamond fashion, those horses get better with age. And she just kept getting better and better and better. And, you know, she, again, has made the finals at every premier event. She has never went to a horse show and not brought home a check. And she is as true today to show as she was as a three-year-old. And she is extremely special. I mean, now I think I've won 100. I think today she's at 102,000. And I'm excited to breed her and ride babies out of her. I'm hopeful that she's going to be quite the producer.
Same lineup of horses. And I love that every single one of them means something to you. And each of their, you're able to kind of adjust your riding to fit each personality. And some are slower to get to where they are. And some are just naturally kind of there when you need them to be. But I just love how every horse is so special and important in your career. You're a non-pro, first of all. You grew up around the horses, but how have you developed this eye for picking out so many incredible yearlings, two-year-olds, three-year-olds? I mean, you're picking young horses, and each one of them seems to be, I don't want to say exactly what you want, but it seems to be that you have quite a few that end up really fitting your program.
I have learned to adapt to them. So, because none of my horses are really the same. They're all so very different. When I talked earlier about loving to teach them, I like to truly teach them. And so therefore I adapt so much to, you know, their way of thinking and the way they take training and the way their preparation is for showing and just everything. So it challenges me. I like to be challenged. and so it challenges me to relate and, you know, help this horse understand what it is we're after. So they don't have to fit my mold. I try to fit them. And so that's probably why I've been able to buy so many and have success on them, is because I've truly just tried to raise them, train them, and guide them to the best of their ability. I always tell people, you know, especially on these young horses, you got to remember, you have to be the adult, so to speak, and, you know, take their little hand and say, come on, it's okay, we can do this, let me show you. And so that's probably why I've had so much success on so many different horses and different styles. I don't know that I really have a very good eye, but it's allowed me to, I like to teach, and I like to try to develop them to be the very best that they can be. And, you know, there's plenty of them that never end up being superstars, but they still end up happy. That's my number one focus. I want them to love what they're doing. I want them to be team players. I want them to want to be on the team. And so even if they're never great, even if they never go to the premier events, they still, you know, develop with confidence. And so that's what's really important with me and all the different horses. And then I think that's what's just allowed me to have so many horses. And I've been so blessed that a lot of these aged horses are still just as good to show today as they were as young horses. And, you know, and I think that just, it's, for me, it's been trying to really lay a good, solid foundation of confidence in what it is we're out there to do.
All I keep thinking about as we're talking is, how do you manage this time-wise? Nicole and I were talking before this podcast about how, I know personally, I'm so busy. I haven't ridden in a long time. How are you managing riding at this high level, training all these horses, and everything else that life throws at you?
Question. you know, I just, one day at a time, I guess. I mean, I'm very devoted. I'm very devoted in everything we do. So, You know, I get up super early in the morning, especially this time of year where it's really hot. So we try to get, you know, the three-year-olds rode. But, and then I drive a truck. I mean, I'm still making a living, you know, aside from riding and training horses. Some people think this is all I do, but it isn't. I don't go do a lot of other things. What I do is the horses, and then I drive a truck. I pull a flatbed primarily. I've got a, you know, big old 379 Peterbilt, and I haul a lot of alfalfa hay and alfalfa cubes, primarily down south, and then we load general freight coming back. So usually what my schedule looks like when I'm not gone to a horse show is, you know, I will generally take a load a week. And that's about a 2.5 day deal. Day down, a day back, half a day to go get unloaded somewhere. Although my husband, Andy, tries to fill in there a lot and will unload for me so I can ride. I just do horses, you know, I mean, we just, I have a lot of horses. I have a lot of horses. And, so I just, the kids help me, DJ and Tucker. They're starting two-year-olds now for me and being able to ride two-year-olds. So that's been so, so helpful. And I don't know. We just juggle it. I mean, we just make it work. And again, the horses, they adapt and they adjust to, you know, the crazy schedule. And, of course, going to the horse shows, you know, it's especially at these premier events, we're gone generally 2 weeks. But we're always going. Not a lot of sleep, a lot of hard work, and we're always going.
Or sat down to talk to, like, seriously, every time you answer one of our questions, I'm just like, gosh, I want to be like that. So thank you for being, you know, I'm a non-pro, I'm a DIYer too. And gosh, your story is so inspiring, and it just kind of like keeps you motivated. Like you can do it. You just got to put your work, you know, keep at it, work hard and, you know, be committed. But with that stated, you just recently joined NRCHA's Million Dollar Club as a non-pro, but also as a woman, which I believe you were the fourth woman to ever cross it, both in the open and the non-pro. That is an incredible achievement. First of all, congratulations. That is an insane, I'm sure when you started this crazy journey in what'd you say, 2018 or 2017, being a million-dollar rider was probably not on your mind. But how have you, you know, what's it been like to kind of reach this milestone?
So yeah, crossing that mark was it was just unbelievable, I guess. You know, I've always set goals. That's how I kind of flow. You know, my first goal was the Snaffle Bit Fraternity. I just wanted to go, you know, experience it. And so that was a goal. It wasn't to win it per se. It was, I wanted that experience. And so I went and I did that, had that experience, had great success. And then I thought, man, it would just, you know, be so cool if a guy could win this one day. And I come back the next year and I win it. And that was so unbelievable that happened for me. Like, I just didn't expect that, you know. My horse was so good, and I give him the credit there. And so, obviously, I was hooked. And when I do anything, I don't do it part way. I mean, if I'm going to jump, I jump in the deep end. And so I thought, you know, wow, if I could be number one. I guess it was in 2018, so it was before 2019, and I won the fraternity in 2018. Hope Mills, I mean, I guess I should back up. My goal is to have this Snaffle Bit fraternity experience. And so I go and I do that. And I have such a great experience that I'm eligible for everything when I go to this first premier event. And after that premier event, I am no longer eligible for anything but the non-pro. I have moneyed myself out of all of the other divisions. And so at the end of the year, you know, NRCHA puts out the top riders list. And so here's this top riders list. Well, Hope Mills is number one, and I'm number two. And I thought, you know, I want to be number one. I wasn't super far off. And so I decide I want to be number one. That's my goal. So here I come back 2019, and I have an incredible year. I win the Futurity on Doing a Little Time. That was just unbelievable. And boom, I go to number one. That's, I mean, if I'm going to be up there, I want to be number one. I don't want to be two or three. And so then, as you know, I'm hook, line, and sinkered, and I'm showing horses, and I'm winning money, and life is amazing. I approach that $500,000 mark, and you know, I approach it with legends and ladies that I looked up to, such as Annie Reynolds and Lori Richards. And I mean, that was an incredible honor because these ladies I had watched as a little girl on those VHS tapes. And, you know, back in the day when they were in their prime, and both of them had long blonde hair like me. So when I was a little girl, I thought that was so cool, you know. They had long blonde hair like me, and they rode so well. And, you know, I could be like them one day maybe. And then to be in the same category at that time for the non-pro, you know, they'd started recognizing non-pros, the NRCHA did, non-pros that had won $500,000 or more. And there was only three of us, which was just unbelievable to me. There was only three of us. And so once I hit that $500,000 mark, I thought, man, it would be amazing to win a million. And then I thought, I'm probably not going to, you know, that's probably pretty far-fetched goal to set, is what I was thinking. That's probably pretty far-fetched. I mean, I'm already, you know, got a little age on me. It's not like I'm, you know, in my 30s. And I don't know. And then I started calculating how much I'd won, you know, in these years that I had been doing it to the 500,000 mark. And I thought, well, if I hump it, I think I can do that. So, I mean, I have already won the Derby. I have already won the Stallion Stakes. I've already won the Snaffle Bit Futurity times two. I've already, those goals have already been achieved. That's all done. So what's next? I don't know. Let's run at a million. Sounds good. Let's do that. So that's the new goal. And, you know, we'll see if we can achieve it. And it just kept adding and adding and adding. And so the beginning of the year, I called the office, the NRCHA office, to see where I was at. And I was 130,000 shy. And so I was like, okay, if I do my job and my horses are with me, that's achievable this year of 2025. And so I kind of kept track a little bit here early on, you know, kind of where, what monies I was winning and roughly where I would be at. And so I happened to be talking to my sister-in-law, Connie Stoney, here before Tulsa. And I says, you know, if everything lines up like it could at Tulsa, I could hit that million at Tulsa. And I says, you know, I'm not saying that I will, but if it all lined up, it could be possible. And then I get to Tulsa and I don't keep track of nothing. You know, I showed six set of horses there. I'm busy showing horses. It's very warm. I'm sweating a lot and I'm not keeping track of my money. So when they announced that night in the arena, I was like, wow, I did that. You know, I was kind of taken back and I achieved my goal. That was so exciting. Like, we achieved it. You know, my horses. Without my horses, I didn't achieve nothing. Without the help, I didn't achieve nothing. So we achieved this million. But it's since then, with, you know, the congratulations from, you know, my heroes. I've had so many of my heroes message me, call me, congratulating me, friends, family, like people that I don't even know sending me messages, congratulations, that I think it's finally set in that I've really achieved something that was more than just a goal for me personally. Like I am amongst heroes, people that I look up to. I mean, every one of those people in the Million Dollar Writers Club are literally my heroes and people that I look up to. And it is an incredible, incredible honor to be amongst them. I mean, it's almost unbelievable. So it's taking several days for this to actually set in that, you know, I'm one of them. And without my horses and all the support I've had, I mean, there's no way I could have achieved it. So I'm so thankful and so blessed for that. But it's an incredible feeling. It's so special.
Yeah. And congratulations again. I mean, what an elite group that you've joined in such a short amount of time. You've really made incredible leaps and bounds. But looking back on your very successful journey so far, what have you learned about yourself through Rain Cow Horse Competition?
I've learned that if I put my mind to it, I can do it. I've learned that you can't achieve nothing if you don't try, you know, and that's just from walking in the pen. I've learned that pressure is a privilege. You know, that's a privilege. So just to have confidence and trust the process, trust what it is I'm at home doing every day, day in and day out, you know, and this showing horses, it's competition amongst all of us, but truly it's more competition with self. And, you know, have I done my job? Are my horses connected with me? And are we doing the job in that pen? So yes, I'm there competing, wanting to be number one, but really what it is, am I doing my job? And are the horses understanding me? And are we a team here? And that is success for me. And then that translates usually to having success, you know, in the competition that we are entered in. So it has grew me, you know, I'm stronger and confident in the process. I've learned to have confidence in the process.
So before we wrap up this interview, which I could probably ask you 10 million more questions, because I just, every answer that you have is just incredible and inspiring. But for the non-pros like myself and Emily and the people who are listening, a lot of our listeners are non-pros. What advice do you have for them as maybe they're starting in the cowhorse journey, or maybe they're stepping out and going into an industry that they're unfamiliar with? What is your advice to them as someone who, you know, I mean, it's been several years now, but when you stepped into the cowhorse pen, you know, you relied on those people, you introduced yourself, they helped you in the herd work. They kind of, you build those relationships. What's your advice for someone who might be struggling to kind of take that leap forward?
Number one, do it. Don't wait. Don't give all the excuses. Don't do the excuses. I'm pretty black and white. Just do it. Step in there. You know, all the people that are in the NRCHA, the very best to, you know, the ones just getting started. Number one, everybody, especially on the upper end, has made all the mistakes that you're going to make when you first start in there. You know, the off pattern, bad choices, whatever it is. We've all done what you're going to go do, and it's okay. Nobody's going to be pointing fingers, snickering, and talking. Everybody is there to help, guide, and lift you up and encourage you. And so you've got to just go do it. Step off and do it. Don't make the excuses, my horse isn't good enough, or I'm not good enough, or I don't look this way, or I don't have the nice truck and trailer, or I don't have, even if you don't have the money, go do it. figure out how to get the money. Go participate. I mean, when I started, I didn't have the money. I worked at the sale barn, you know, just to show my little horse at the quarter horse shows. Desire. You got to have the desire. And if you have the desire, you can achieve anything. And so just don't wait. I think that's the biggest thing. Don't wait. And don't be afraid of what you look like or anything. You need help, ask somebody. I promise anybody, absolutely anybody you ask in the NRCHA, at the event, whether it be a small show, big show, it doesn't matter. They will help you. And they will encourage you and they will guide you. Ask questions. The more questions you ask, even the ones you think are dumb are not dumb. And just come do it. It's just, and it doesn't even matter how old you are. I mean, my mom, who's pushing 80, wants to start showing in the boxing. And she can, you know, she's going to be able to do that and she's going to have a great time. And so it's so fulfilling, the cow horses. I think that NRCHA, the cow horse, is just such a, you know, neat, fulfilling event. But even if you're stepping off and you're wanting to do the ranch riding, or you want a team rope, or, you know, you're going to go to the team sortings or ranch versatility, I mean, whatever, the reinings, don't wait. There's never going to be a good time. It's never going to be a right time. It's just go do it.
Debbie, it has been absolutely incredible talking to you. I want to go ride. I want to be like you. But thank you so much for hopping on and talking to us and, yeah, telling your story. Appreciate it.
Well, you know, it's quite an honor to be asked to do this, so I really appreciate it. Thank you for being interested and doing this. And I hope this really inspires a lot of non-pros, because, you know, I didn't come from the best. I didn't have the best. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there that can go achieve exactly what I've achieved if they have the want to and the drive. And so I hope this really inspires some people and you know, they come participate. I hope it helps them to go reach for some goals and achieve them.
Well, it has absolutely inspired Emily and I, so I can't wait to hear what our listeners have to say, because this has probably been one of my favorite episodes we've ever recorded. So thank you again. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much to Ride TV for sponsoring this episode.
Thank you guys for tuning into the Ride Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and please be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow Horse and Rider Magazine on social media and find us at horseandrider.com to see all the cool things that we're up to. And if you have any comments or questions, please be sure to hit us up at horseandrider@equinenetwork.com. We want to hear from you guys. And if you like what you're listening to, please be sure to leave us a review on iTunes.